this is it, people. None of us have ever done anything like this before, apart from Mike, who, as we all know, once stole a tank and tried to invade Paris. Hello?
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 41. Yep, we're talking space this week. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
And Josh.
And this should be a lot of fun.
We are pimping space. We are spaced pimps this week.
Yes, well, it is coming out officially on DVD as of this Tuesday, and I've owned this series for how many years?
A long, long time.
Yeah, I think it's as long as since I've known you.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, so, and Josh has just been exposed this week.
Yes.
In all its glory.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, I remember we used to say, there's no way they're ever going to release this in America. No way that's ever happening. It's kind of amazing that it's actually
Why do you
happening.
Think it took so long to...
Honestly, because of the music rights.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you watched through... I know you didn't quite finish it.
Yeah.
Season 2, episode 1, when they had the Star Wars music.
Oh, that's
true. And they do all the Star Wars music by itself. I'm like, how did you do that? And there's a lot of Fatboy Slim and, you know, a lot of others. David Holmes and a lot of really good stuff.
Yeah, same problem with the Wonder Years.
Yes.
You know, the music rights.
Yeah, they changed the music and that kind of
stuff. That was a British show, was it?
No.
Okay, because
no. Fred Savage.
Okay. Yeah, but it's why it never came out here either.
Was that really Marilyn Manson?
No.
No.
No, okay. Please debunk that rumor for me.
No, that was not Marilyn Manson.
Okay. Yeah, we're off tracking already here. Let's go ahead and do we want to talk about what we watched this week?
Yeah.
What did you watch this week, sir?
I saw The Nines with Ryan Reynolds. I liked it a lot.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Really cool. Liked it.
Was that the one where he kind of like loses his mind a little bit?
Kind of. It's a weird, weird film. It's been compared to like Donnie Darko, and it's a good comparison. It's not quite as good as that good, but Reynolds' performance is very good. It proves that he's a serious actor. He could actually do that kind of thing. And I love it because it's a Roll Riders movie. It goes off in all sorts of weird tangents and directions. It's a fantasy. It's a satire. It's a movie within a documentary. It's pretty. Huh. There's nothing else like it. I think you guys would like it.
Cool. Did you see anything, Josh?
I saw Iron Man again.
Did you?
Nice.
So awesome. So glad to see it again. So especially after like kind of going through the summer and then being able to revisit that, which is awesome. So
very cool. I got just about nothing. We started watching Doctor Who series 2. A lot of my time, okay, oh yeah, I barely mentioned this, but we got a dog, and so we've named her Harley after Harley Quinn, but I mean, she's a sweet dog, but you know, your life gets turned upside down, kind of, sort of, when you're getting the dog adjusted and stuff, so.
It's a rough life.
Oh, that, you know, you deserve that one there, sorry, buddy. And then instead of seeing Dark Knight, I went and saw Mamma Mia.
You did?
Yeah, okay, no. There's not enough money in the world, I don't think.
I saw Mamma Mia, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Well, let's just go ahead and talk about what came out this week in theaters, and we'll just jump right into it.
Okay, and real quickly, I want to say I took your advice, saw King of Kong. Great movie. Thank you very many. You know, I actually liked it a little bit better than Erica Darnation, only because it was such a polished film, you know.
It was very polished.
The filmmaking for a doc was great.
Oh, yeah. The reason why I liked Erica Darnation better is because you have two guys you can root for.
You're right.
King of Kong, there's definitely only one guy you're going to root for.
I hated that other guy. Like, yeah, he was hilariously villainous.
Oh, yeah. It's like he was completely oblivious.
Right.
Well, I'm doing something wrong? Yeah, okay.
Such a jerk, yeah.
Yes, the definition of basement geek. And his parents were hysterical, too.
Yeah.
He could kick it if you did. I was like, wow, no. I don't think he could kick his way out of a paper bag, but okay. All right, theatrical releases.
Theatrical release, you had Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight currently taking over the world. Mamma Mia taking over everyone else. And Space Chimps taking over no one.
I could have gone somewhere very bad with that, so I appreciate that, sir. Well, you saw Mamma Mia?
I actually did. Yeah, and I really liked it. It's another Hairspray, you know? It's like that. If you like that kind of music, if you're into that kind of thing, you'll love it. Hate ABBA, you'll hate Mamma Mia.
Which is why I've recused myself from talking about it.
But it's another Hairspray. There's all these actors you've never expect to see them singing and dancing. Some of them are awesome, like Amanda Seyfried, who's freaking gorgeous. She spends half the movie in a bathing suit. Oh, I can't wait to see this movie again. And then Meryl Streep is terrific. But you know what? Pierce Brosnan gives a great performance, not a good singer. So whenever he's saying, people in the audience are like, oh no, not another 007 song. But otherwise, good movie. Very good movie.
Very cool. Okay. And then we also saw Space... Never Die. No, wait. No. No. Okay. Dark Knight.
How are we going to jump into this?
Huh?
So how are we going to jump into that?
Well, you just saw it, so I want to hear your fresh take.
So I know one of you liked it, one of you were rather disappointed. I'm kind of finding myself coming down in the middle. I think it's a very well done movie. It's a very good movie. Saying you like it, it's such a dark film that I don't know that you can actually say that. I don't know. I felt brutalized psychologically and emotionally by the time I was done with that movie. It was very well done. It was very good. How this movie got a PG-13 is beyond me.
Yeah.
This is a direct correlation to Batman Returns. It's the second Batman movie, and it was a joke that it got a PG-13.
But there's no blood in it at all.
But look at the content of the movie.
No, I know.
It's like The Ring. There's no blood in it, but that movie is messed up.
Well, The Ring is kids' fare compared to what this was, I think. I mean, as far as the adult themes, and not sexually or anything, but just very highbrow concepts it takes a mature mind to grasp.
Right.
How many 13-year-olds do you think are going to walk out of there actually really getting what happened in that movie?
Children would be terrified of Two-Face.
Oh, yeah.
Well, My brother, surprisingly, didn't scare him, but like I think a lot of it just went kind of over his head.
Which, in a way, you hope that happens. Cause,
yeah.
I had a serious qualm with what Batman did at the end. I thought it was, in a way, it was very selfless, but it's very much out of character. Related to Two-Face and certain responsibilities he takes on. That's all I will say. The Joker, I didn't like the Joker. But as I was sitting there really thinking about it, I was telling you right before we recorded, when you first saw Heath Ledger in the makeup as the Joker, I'm like, that's the Arkham Asylum Joker. And that's really what we got in this movie. And it's an ugly character. It's not a fun character in any way, shape, or form, which really kind of, it made me uncomfortable to watch in some ways. But it was still very well done. I think it was a great performance by Ledger. I loved Commissioner Gordon. I just, you gotta love Gordon.
I'm so glad what happened with his character happened.
Yeah, me too.
Because I was like, they're not gonna do that. They're not gonna do that.
I will say, this movie set you up in a way that you didn't know what was going to happen. Pretty much anything could happen. Certain characters kicked off that you didn't expect. And I will say that is multiple. I really think Morgan Freeman was almost criminally underused.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have seen.
I think everyone was underused, to be quite honest.
And we're sitting at a 2.5-hour-long movie.
Yeah.
I don't know that anyone was overused, which was kind of nice for a change. Usually if everyone's underused, one guy's just taking over everything and just almost to the detriment of the movie, which I really didn't think happened. This isn't a movie I'm going to pop in on a Saturday afternoon. It's kind of... It's we were talking before, and it's almost like a Schindler's List type movie. Not in that, it's that...
important.
Yes. But it is that dark of a film thematically. Yeah. I think that we'll get to the Watchmen trailer eventually, but knowing the content of the Watchmen, I think it was very appropriate for them to put that in front of Dark Knight, even though they didn't show it at my theater, which really bummed me out.
Thanks, man. I thought that was in front of every single print. So that
I thought so too. Right, I mean, I got Terminator 4 and okay, we talked about that last week, right? Did we talk about the Terminator 4 trailer?
No, it just came with this. We talked about the trailer coming.
Okay.
But, yeah.
I actually kind of liked it, and I don't want to like this movie.
Dun, dun.
I really don't want to like this movie, but that trailer was good on the big screen. So, yeah. I want to hear what Barry has to say next, because...
This has been a tough week for Barry.
You've also had more time to process what you thought about it.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much what you said, I did not like the film. It's not because it's a badly made film or a bad movie. In fact, it's a very impressive movie, but I didn't like it. One of my biggest problems was I thought it went on forever. You mentioned the cast. I thought this movie is not only way too long, but I thought structured in a way kind of awkwardly in which Morgan Freeman barely has any screen time, but Eric Roberts and Anthony Michael Hall have all these scenes. Like, what the heck is going on?
Fair enough.
And you had all that unfinished business in the beginning from the first movie regarding a returning character, which I won't give away, but I thought, what a bad way to get the movie off to a start. I thought, what a jumbled way to get it started. I didn't like that whole bit with the money laundering business. To me, there was so much in there that was great. I just felt like it got lost in this movie that did not need to be as ridiculously long as it was. I thought the ending was a wash. I didn't like the ending where they're standing around moralizing for 20 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
Action sequences were incredible, no question. Amazing action sequences, great performances. But, to be very delicate about this, because I know everybody, wants to see him get a posthumous Oscar. And, for his body of work, say yes, absolutely. I thought Ledger's performance was kind of like the movie itself. It was very daring. It was very interesting. And, you know, certainly nothing to not be ashamed of. I mean, very, you know, very impressive. But I didn't think it was brilliant, and I don't think the movie itself was brilliant either. I really don't.
I will say I don't think it was the best performance of the movie.
No, I think Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah,
Aaron Eckhart. Thank you. I totally agree with you. Cool.
Best okay, performance. But before we get into that, we need to give Josh his say.
I don't know what to say because you guys are like, rawr.
No. No, though. That's the thing, though. It's to say, you know, this isn't like 2001 where I'm like, I recognize this as a great film, but I freaking hate it.
Yeah.
This is a really good movie. I respect it. I'm glad I saw it. I don't know that I'm going to see it again right away.
I just really liked it.
That's okay. You've seen it twice.
I did see it twice. I saw it twice in a 24-hour period, which
you
I don't know if that's
when it was over, I felt depressed and drained. You didn't feel that way at all.
I was so excited when it was over for some reason. I just thought the movie, it just kept going.
Did you buy the toys like you did with
No, I didn't buy the toys yet. I don't know. I just thought it was exciting. I loved all the characters. I was telling you guys before the show, it reminded me personally a lot of the cartoon show, which I watched when I was little. So I loved seeing Two-Face. I do have some problems with it. Like you guys, I did think the third act did kind of fail a little bit. There's some things in the Batman Begins that I liked so much that they didn't use in this one. Like all the bats that he actually like used in Batman Begins. That wasn't, you know, they didn't acknowledge that at all. That's something that I would like to see return.
At the same time, you also saw a lot more detective work in this movie.
Yeah.
Which I really appreciated. Yeah. I thought the character of Bruce Wayne was very much closer, especially to, I think the cartoon really played Bruce Wayne the best because he always tried to do what he could in society as Bruce Wayne as well as Batman. And he really got that vibe in this movie as well. As far as the gruffness and the pessimism that Batman eventually gets, it's closer to Batman Beyond, but still, it's not completely out of character.
I loved seeing the villains interact with each other. Like I told Barry, Barry doesn't agree with me, but I love that scene at the hospital. Do you not like it
either? I didn't buy it.
You didn't buy it?
It was almost like Anakin turning to the dark side.
For me, it was Schumacher Batman. It was so it felt campy and silly to me.
To me, it was man, this is really turning into negative, and I really liked the movie overall. I thought it was a good movie, but I think that seriously, like to make the change between one of the characters from one side to another. That's all I'll say because I don't want to, you know. It was as quick as Anakin changing in Episode 3 of Star Wars, and I was like, that was fast. Really, it's going to take like that, though, 3 sentences.
The whole movie was a build up to that.
So but you never saw him. But here's the thing: you never gave this person any reason to change sides.
He didn't really change sides, though. I think he just kind of went out. I don't see him as changing sides. I saw him as taking personal revenge, which I don't think is the same as.
But he's taking personal revenge. He's taking personal revenge in a place where there's no evidence for any kind of need for it up until the certain event. Certain event in the movie.
There's evidence all I don't want to do without giving away spoilers. Well,
non-spoiler, but there is that scene early in the movie where he has that moment with a bad person and he flips the coin and you see it. It's almost like you see it coming.
But I knew what was up with the coin. And so I knew exactly what he was saying. And he was like, I'm in control at all times. And they even make a point of saying it later when Rachel gets the coin and says, oh, you make your own luck.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that his vendetta that he goes out to he addressed with Gordon earlier in the movie with the police people being in his squad. That's all I'm going to say.
With police people, yes, but he never had any reason he never showed any reason or any kind of distrust for Gordon himself.
But I think that was all, to me, I felt like that was just kind of all building up. I don't know.
Okay. I can see this, the point of view. I don't agree with it, but I thought that it was kind of quick because first of all, because beyond that happening, are you really going to listen to the maniac who's just killed 5 people before that?
Maybe if I had half my face, man.
It's there's that too. Yeah, and you know, everyone knows that Two-Face is in it. I was shocked to find out that it was exactly the same design as what was in Ain't It Cool. That was ingeniously done. I don't even want to know how difficult it was to do the Two-Face makeup
because it looked really impressive.
Assuming it was CGI,
I'm guessing most of it was too.
But there's no way you could do that with an eyeball
or with the teeth.
Oh, with the teeth, yeah. So I'm assuming like maybe he just had like a cloth, like a blue or green cloth on.
Probably.
But yeah, seamless special effects.
Yes. Yes. Special effects. So, okay.
I liked it when he did the shot. He wiped it off.
Yeah. Oh, that was kind of gross. I was wondering if they'd do it, and I was like, see, that's a nice touch. Do you want to talk any more about it, or shall we move on to our
news? Let's talk a little more. But did you guys like the business on the boat at the end?
I thought
that went on too long. And
it did go on too long. I liked the concept.
And I think they even addressed that when Joker's like, we could do this forever and ever. I'm like, you have been doing it for the whole movie.
I did like the fact, initially, when you had someone come out and do something, holding a gun, I was like, this character doesn't use a gun. I don't want to use it. I don't want to kill it because initially it really caught me off guard.
Yeah.
But I like that little touch of you know other people taking on certain mantles and trying to do things and you know showing just how badly it can backfire. And
yeah.
What do you guys think of Maggie's performance over Katie Holmes?
I can see why Katie Holmes walked away. Not that the character's bad in any way, shape, or form. I think she's great. I could see someone not liking where that character goes. That's all I'll say. Well, we're really having to be really vague with this because of the spoilers.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't, you know, it's almost like I feel like it's a relief that we're actually taking somewhat pseudo negative look at it because I swear, like, this movie, the hype and the love for it is so overwhelming that I just.
Well, it's easy to take a darker perspective because it's such a dark film.
Yeah.
In many ways, it is a horror film.
But to talk about the aspects about the movie that we thought didn't work or whatever, because all week I've been reading reviews like did you read our local critic?
No.
Local critic gave it an A+. He said that it is next to Aliens, The Empire Strikes Back, and The Godfather Part 2 as being the greatest sequel of all time, best superhero movie in history, and the greatest movie of the year, and Chris Nolan is one of the greatest directors of all time. He gave it an A+, even though he called it ugly and too long. He still gave it an A+.
This is my same issue I have with video game people give games a 10 out of 10 or movie sites who give movies a 10 out of 10 when they say, even when they go into saying that there might be an issue here.
Right.
If it's not a 10 out of 10, it's not a 10 out of 10.
Right.
I think Nolan is an extremely talented filmmaker. I could definitely see if they do a third film, them taking a structure that would make this be The Empire Strikes Back, which is the severely dark turn.
Yeah.
With it being such a dark film, it's very easy to talk down about it because it put me in a downer mood. It kind of did.
I was so excited. I was like,
"Oh no, no, no!" Don't get me wrong. If they make a third one and they end up doing the Riddler, like Gary Oldman was talking about,
or Catwoman,
I mean,
they even address
as long as it's not Halle Berry.
Well,
thankfully, we don't have to worry about that.
Can we briefly address the slash films thing? Because I think that's ridiculous.
Okay,
and I do want to talk about that.
What happened?
Especially since we're kind of taking that approach to it. Somebody over at the New York Times—I don't know if it's New York Times or like New York Time Magazine.
I think it was New York Daily.
It was several New York magazines gave it really bad reviews.
Really bad reviews, and Slash Film and posted it up and posted it like the guy was wrong on his opinion and like he didn't know what he was talking about. And then everyone else.
How much
was
calling out do we want to do about this?
Not much.
I'll just say, and then you know, people were commenting on the guy's not knowing what he's talking about, but yet I'm not, but you guys are sitting here with a negative. More negative opinion of it than I do.
Relatively
negative,
yeah.
I just think that it's, you know, it is all opinion, and I don't think that's fair to
it is.
Call people out like that.
We shouldn't smack people down for their opinion because they're entitled to it, and certainly movies that have gotten bad reviews initially have been appraised over time, and there have been movies that, you know, were hated, and people over the years have gone, you know, this is actually a great movie. There are countless films that have done that. Everything, like, you know, like It's a Wonderful Life was a huge bomb when it came out. Nobody liked it. Nobody saw it. Donnie Darko.
Yeah.
Well, Fight Club, people loved it. Fight Club was a bomb when it came out.
Yeah. I saw that twice in the theater.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And to other people who may want to take harsh views about this, you aren't making your point at all when you just throw a lot of profanity out there. If you actually are going to like try to deconstruct someone's opinion and tell them why they're wrong, you need to actually do it instead of try to just scream a lot and then pretend that you actually said something.
It shouldn't even be about trying to tell someone why they're wrong. It should be, you know,
should be like, this is why I disagree.
Like we're doing right now. This is a discussion.
We're having a conversation. Because I don't think you're wrong. And for Pete's sake, in a few years, you might be like, you know, I don't really like that movie as much as I used to. And I'll be like, you know what? I saw it a fifth time and I loved it now. So,
exactly.
And then, you know, that could very well happen. It happens all the time with these movies.
And just for you listeners, one thing I love about doing this show is the fact that the way you'd hear us talk about movies, if you were to overhear us talking at lunch about movies, this is exactly what
it's
like.
Yeah, we're not going to like have a fist fight when this is over.
or, you know, it's not like, you know, some shows do be a bit pretentious and like to hear themselves talk. I've kind of noticed that in some shows. I'm not going to give any names at all whatsoever because it's not constructive in any way, shape, or form. I like the fact that we can all have our say. And it's just talking about, you know, people talking about movies that they love. That's all. So, yeah. Shall we move on to news? Because it's starting to turn into a soapbox and we need to get off that
get
now.
Up, yeah. Sorry if I brought that up.
That's okay. I'll start it off on a downer. Why is Scream 4 coming?
Well, especially when I told you guys this, I was at Comic-Con 2 years ago and I asked David Arquette about it and he said it's not happening. So it's like, oh, okay, surprise.
I mean, granted, you know, the Scream series is the one time that I've really liked Jamie Kennedy, ever.
Not in Kangaroo Jack? Wait, was he in that?
No, that was Jerry O'Connell.
Sorry.
Why do we know that?
Because I remember people talking about how bad it was, and yeah.
It was
so
bad.
So
I saw that in theaters.
So Scream 1 I thought was a good movie. It was, you know, very well done. Scream 2 was a little disappointing. The ending enjoyable. Really pissed me off.
Yeah.
3 was a giant turd bomb waiting to happen. And we don't need a fourth.
Unless they do something that's going to reinvent the...
They're talking about being like Scream the Next Generation. I'm like...
Because Scream, okay. I feel like, is a really reinvention of the horror franchise. Do you
Scream
feel that
is,
way?
Yes, Scream is still a terrific movie. But I feel kind of how you do, Dave. I really felt like if they wanted to take that angle of like reinventing and doing something radical and crazy, they should have done it in the third one.
Yes.
They should have done it where it's, oh my gosh, it's Sydney's dad who's been killing everybody. There's like something crazy, amazing, mind-blowing like that. It's too late to... Yeah.
Yeah, I think they are going to start from scratch, and I think they have to. But if you're going to play in that universe, what hasn't been done already?
Well,
I mean,
you have to open up the movie with Neve Campbell getting killed, inevitably. That has to be the opening scene.
Yeah.
And you just... The thing is the Ghostface mask guy even scary anymore? Because after Scary Movie 1, I'd say, no, it's...
What?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Okay, sorry. Sorry, I just had to get... That's my only piece of news. I just wanted to get it out there and over with. All right, Barry.
Well, one of my favorite films from the 80s, Valley Girl, strangely, has been... I love this movie. If you're listening, you haven't heard it, this is Nicolas Cage. Even if you hate Nicolas Cage, he's great in this movie. It's Deborah Foreman from April Fool's Day. Romantic comedy from the 80s, but like up there with like Ferris Bueller. Seriously, it's that good. Valley Girl, great movie. MGM Studios is doing a remake of this as a musical. Not as like a Broadway musical or anything like that. They're actually making it into a movie musical, which is so weird. It's so random.
Where's Nicolas Cage? Is he going to be in it again?
I can't
only if he's only if he's Dr. Fu Manchu. That's the only way I would accept that. Okay. I lived in the valley and never saw Valley Girl. I left the valley far behind and yeah. Okay. Have you got anything at all, Josh?
I'm trying to think.
If you don't, I have one more thing that I totally forgot about. Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog came out this week. You got till midnight tonight to watch it for free over at drhorrible.com. Neil Patrick Harris fits so well in Joss Whedon's universe. I'm telling you. Have you watched any of it, Barry?
Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog?
Yeah. Okay. You watched the first episode, right?
First one, yeah.
The second episode is actually way better. And the third episode, Nathan Fillion even sings. And it is... It shouldn't be as good as it is.
Is it better than Mama Mia? No, I'm just kidding.
Nothing is. No. It's good. It's really good. It's knowingly campy, but it's fun. And Neil Patrick Harris is really good at like riffing and improvising.
Yeah, and he's a good singer too. Yeah. Oh, he is. You need to.
I actually just watched like an episode of How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, he's hilarious. Damn funny. Yeah,
he's the best thing about Harold Kumar too.
Yeah, that's kind of like I was like, okay, I got to watch this because it's Neil Patrick Harris, and he plays well. His personality lends itself very well to Joss Whedon's writing style. Yeah. And stuff with Bad Horse, like the phone calls and the letters and all that fun stuff is great. And it is a very good time. If you haven't watched it, watch it. If you have to buy it on iTunes, go ahead. And I'm going to buy it on DVD as soon as it comes out because it is really good.
Very good. The Talisman, the Stephen King novel written co-written by Peter Straub, written years and years ago. At one point, Spielberg was thinking about making a movie into this. Didn't happen. It's this big epic fantasy adventure about this boy who goes to this lost world in search for his kidnapped mother. A filmmaker randomly has made the first 7 or so minutes of the book, roughly, into this short film, kind of as a promo reel, saying, "Hey, I just want."
Didn't he start it a while ago?
I believe he did. Okay. It stars Cameron Bright, who is the creepy kid in X-Men 3 and also Godsend and Birth, playing Jack Sawyer, the young boy. Anyway, the quality on this is fantastic. Ain't It Cool News put it up. I believe they were the first ones to put it up. It's very, very good.
Did he
very impressive.
Shoot it on 35 or 16 or something?
I don't know, but it looks professional. Huh. And the special effects are accomplished. The tone is good. The music's good. It's just really top notch. So if they let him do it, I can't imagine them letting this complete out of nowhere unknown do it. But I thought a very good promo reel.
Very cool.
Are we going to talk about the Watchmen trailer?
Yes.
Yes. How did I forget that? Even though I didn't get to see it. I'm so bummed.
You've seen it though on
the... Yeah. I wanted to see it on the big screen. I'm hoping to show it at IMAX because now between that and I want to see the action, we might go catch that next week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because what scenes in the dark? I actually wanted to ask you that. What scenes in the IMAX were actually filled up the screen?
All of the wide scenes. Batman jumping off the building
in Hong Kong.
Yes.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And, yeah. That and the, all the all the widescreen scenes right before the policeman function that goes badly.
Okay.
That, like, everything that's like,
is the tank, the bat pod stuff, is that IMAX?
Yes, that's IMAX. Wow. And also the opening bank robbery entirely in IMAX.
Well, yeah, wow. That was in front of I Am Legend, so.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, it's something else. Like, you barely even see, it's really seamless when they switch from super IMAX to just regular, yeah, just big screen for, yeah, the movie. It didn't take me out of the movie at all. I was like, oh great, now it's even bigger.
Nice.
But the Watchmen trailer.
Oh, okay. So had you started reading the book before?
No, because what happened was I watched a trailer. You guys were hyping it up so much, and I didn't have internet last week, so I couldn't see it. So I went to the Midnight of Batman, and I was hyping it up for my mom, and then we saw the trailer. So we finally saw the trailer, and then I was like, I didn't understand what was going on. And neither did my mom. She's like, that's what you were hyping up? And I was like, yeah.
That's why on the side I referenced the Twilight trailer, the initial one, because I'm, yeah, like, this looks like crap. But again, all the fans are like, that's this scene and this scene and this scene. And that's totally what the Watchmen trailer was.
Well, so I went and bought the comic yesterday, and
we converted another one, Dave. Yes.
The third or fourth chapter, and just as little bit as I'm in, I'm like, how are they going to make this into a movie?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good thing they're going for the hard R, because that's pretty, yeah, much what the entire story is.
Yep. I'm more worried about the length, because it's supposed to be a two-hour, yeah, movie, right? How the heck are they going to do that?
There's some stuff where that's been cut that they're just going to put on the DVD for the extended cut, but good. Still, I mean, back when Gilliam was like, look, this needs to be like an HBO miniseries to, yeah, make this decent, I kind of still agree with that, but the look of it is so dead on.
It's one of the best trailers I've seen in a long time. The use of that Smashing Pumpkin song is perfect. What a, yes, weird... It's from the Batman and Robin soundtrack, and it's perfect. Yes. It's a perfect song.
Yeah.
Oh. I got to say, though, that's exactly what Snyder did with the 300 trailer. He slapped some rock song on there.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And you know,
and someone else brought up a very good point. Can the entire movie be slow motion?
Well, you know, the other thing is too, I mean, this trailer, I mean, it gives you the visual sense that yes, he's recreating the panels and everything, but you don't get any sense of performance,
yeah,
or story.
That's what the question is.
And that's, and you're absolutely right about being a strictly a fanboy trailer. I didn't realize that until I showed it to Julie. I'm like, you have to see this. This is the most amazing trailer ever. She's like, I don't get it. I'm like, oh.
I told Steph before we went in, I'm like, if they show this, you're not going to know what's going on, but I'm going to be very happy. I'm just telling you. And she's like, okay. Well,
yeah, the effects look fantastic.
Dr. Manhattan looks great.
Looks incredible. Malin Ackerman in that outfit. Looks, yes,
awesome.
Yes. Mm-mm, good. Okay, shall we take a break and then
wait? T4 trailer. Did you want to talk about that too?
Oh yeah. I liked it, and I don't want to.
Aw, this is kind of like an AA meeting. Hi, my name is Dave. Hi, Dave.
I liked the T4 trailer. It's very begrudgingly I say that, because it may not completely Mick suck, but I still haven't completely forgiven Mick G.
It kind of Mick reminds me of Transformers in a way.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah, the teaser for,
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it could, yeah, be. Yeah, the creature at the end of it. I was like, okay, where are they going with this?
Optimus?
Yeah. And there you go.
Yeah. I'll shut up now.
Okay, no, but it's a good trailer overall. I mean, you know, it's Christian Bale gives a lot of credibility to that trailer.
He gives so much credibility. I mean, he might be playing Robin Hood next to Ridley Scott. I mean, this guy's
that,
like,
got debunked.
Oh, it's definitely not happening?
Yes.
Ah, shoot. Yeah. Oh, he'll still conquer America. He already is.
There's only one Robin Hood, and that would be Cary Elwes. I'm sorry.
That's right. Thank you. Because his Robin Hood had an English accent.
Exactly.
Wow. Do we also want to talk about the Twilight trailer, the second one?
Yes. Why not?
I didn't see it.
It's you know, it's better than the last one.
It is better. You get more of a sense of actual story as opposed to being just teenagers.
At which point Janet is very happy right now because we're not dogging on Twilight.
No. And that's
okay,
the thing.
Okay, I'm not dogging on Twilight.
Because I swear, like, after reading that article, I swear I'm so for this movie now. I really am looking forward to seeing it.
Okay, it's gone from this looks like, you know, all those bad things I said before to this probably isn't meant for me. The production values definitely look like they're stepped up, you know, from the last trailer. It looks a bit more solid. It just looks like the kind of storyline that may not connect with me. So I'm not going to talk ill of it, but
vampires in love, Dave. It's basically Dracula with hickeys.
Wow.
wasn't there a love story in
Lost Boys?
No, what was the Tom Cruise one?
Interview with the Vampire?
Yeah, wasn't there a love story kind of in that?
Well,
no?
Between really. Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise, but it was unconsummated.
Okay, gotcha.
I'm serious, Lewis. Lestat had something going on.
Kirsten Dunst's character had the thing,
well,
too.
She had she was in love with Brad Pitt's character, but you know, she's a full-grown woman and stuck in the body of an 8-year-old. So, yeah.
That's just kind of icky.
So, statutory.
But not.
Yes, in a way that Anne Rice never intended. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Okay,
let's talk about, speaking, I'm going to bring this up because, let's face it, we've always said, let's try to reach the widest fan base possible.
Oh, no.
Speaking of.
You're not going to bring up what I think.
I am. Because I know you have no interest in seeing this, but I've seen High School Musical 1 and 2.
Oh, that wasn't where I thought you were going.
Oh, okay. Now, I'm bringing that up. The third trailer. I'm excited to see it because I like the first two. Granted, you know, they are cheesy. They are like Grease done as a G-rated movie, but both of those movies are very well done. They're charming. They're funny. For what they are, they're well written.
And they know what they are. It's like the Andy Hardy movies.
It's like the Frankie and Annette's beach movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Just and like it's innocuous fun. No, I thought you were going for the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants 2 trailer.
No, I was not going there. Though I don't know if I'm looking forward to that, but I'll see it because I saw the first one and for what it was, again, it was good.
Okay.
It was.
Okay.
I've lost all my credibility.
No, not at all.
I was like, Dog and Dark Knight. I'm like, happy to see.
I don't know if I can drive you back home.
I could walk, fanboy.
Okay, is there anything else we need to do before we get to a break?
Well, you know who Zac Efron is, or what he is, rather. So I don't know why you.
Oh, wow. From Ethan. Ethan's title for him.
That's right. I do remember that now.
Which we'll let him say because we're going to try to get him on the next couple of weeks.
Nice.
Yeah, if I haven't emailed you yet, Ethan, yeah, surprise. Okay, let's take a quick break and then we will be right back.
This ought to teach him.
Evening, Brownie. How about you step away from the axe?
I am not a brownie. I am a fae.
Fae? Wait a second. Robin Goodfellow.
Ah, so you know of Peck the Trickster.
Yeah, I know you. Acrianus, the Giddy Galleon, a dice game. Remember me?
Oh. Billy Bob Beddings. Of course.
Kind of rude, don't you think, to come calling on an old friend from the Stomping Grounds and just help yourself to his weapons. Sounds like trouble.
Well, you started it.
Beg your pardon?
You stole a scribe's birthday. My cousin's scribe. The Dark Goddess isn't pleased you're releasing your new adventure on 080808.
That's why the promo's called Billy's Crazy Eights Shifter. August 8th is when The Case of the Pitcher's Pendant is out on Amazon.com, and I'm looking for listeners to give up the greenbacks for the dwarf detective.
Well, aren't we feeling a bit full of ourselves, Scrappy? Or perchance you do not know that Digital Magic, the sequel to Chasing the Bard, will also be available for purchase on August 8th. Happy birthday, Pip!
Two sequels to two award-nominated books available on the same date. Like I said, sounds like trouble.
Yes, double trouble.
On August 8th, 2008, show your support for the Dwarf Detective, the Fae Trickster, and podcast fiction. Purchase your copies of The Case of the Pitcher's Pendant by T. Morris and Digital Magic by Philippa Ballantyne on Amazon.com. We've seen the days of the FDO and Palm's Daddy. Now comes 8808, the day of double trouble.
All right, so we're working together. Behave.
You think you can make me?
I got Beatrice here. What do you got? Not bad, Shifter. Not bad.
And yes, I'm hooked on Bilbo Baggins. I think I've gotten through like 12 chapters in a patio book in like a week.
Wow, man.
Kind of kills my work productivity, but oh well. But
why work? You can just do this.
Well, yeah.
Your boss doesn't listen to this show, does he?
No. No, actually.
No, because he's right outside.
I listen to it in my off time. But this next week's episode, we're working on just finally hammering out the final details of being able to, I'm going to have a chat with T. Morris and Philippa Ballantyne and talk movies as well as their new book and all that fun stuff. And then we'll be back for our normal episode the next week. And we'll go from there. But in the meantime, dear sweet Spaced.
Yay!
It is coming out on DVD this coming Tuesday, like in 2 days. I figured that we should give a little bit more of a primer of what this show is and why it's good and why people should watch it. I think it's worth a blind buy, you know, buying it without seeing it. Would you guys agree?
Anybody who liked or loved Shaun of the Dead or Hot Fuzz has to own this for sake of completion, because it's almost, you know, and again, you know, I'm guilty as charged. I did not see every single episode. I'm a little behind there. But yeah, this almost, it feels, I mean, all the influences are there. The wit is there. The intelligence is there. The style is there. This is
really stylized.
This is what all of those scary movies, epic movies, disaster movies wish they were. It's when the episodes take on a satirical title, they do it in a way that is not only loving and obviously shows how much they love the stuff, but they do it in such a funny, clever, irreverent way.
I totally agree.
Okay, fair enough.
You just said, so
it's all good. Let's just go through the characters real quick. I did the setup last time. It's a very typical what you'd expect to see in a sitcom. Boy and girl run into each other, have to pretend they're a couple to get an apartment. You know,
it is a sitcom, but just it's
exactly. But they kind of took that sitcom formula and then just kind of kicked it in the So let's go through the characters real quick. The show actually I will get to let's get to the core of why I was really upset about McGee in the first place. They were talking about on the remake having it, you know, originally created by Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright. That was completely and totally incorrect. It was actually created by Jessica Stevenson, Nay Hines, and Simon Pegg. They brought in Edgar Wright because his visual style fit what they wanted to do. And the fact that you could say that you have so much respect for the source material and can't even get that little detail right gets you written off in my book completely. You might as well not even bother talking to me anymore. So that's why I've always been so adamant about it.
That's a good reason, Dave.
So they got together, did this show. Jessica Hines.
Yes. What was McGee planning on doing with this series? Was he just going to do it, but in American?
Yes. Trying to Americanize it. You know how that went great for Coupling and all.
Okay. Yeah.
Worked for The Office, not so much for Coupling.
Well, with The Office, you also had, you know, the creators involved.
Yes, and Ricky Gervais has said that, you know, it's a different beast, but you know, he more or less has given his blessing.
Yeah, both of them have it. I forget. Oh shoot, I feel bad for not knowing remembering the other gentleman who created The Office with him.
Oh, I can't remember offhand.
Shoot. Yeah. Oh well, send us an email.
Sorry,
we'll take our verbal beating later.
We all love The Office.
Exactly. Yes. So the show sets up with Simon Pegg as Tim Bisley and Jessica Hines as Daisy Steiner as the titular couple who become friends and, you know, move in together and have Scooby-Doo moments and other great things. You had Nick Frost in his first serious acting title playing Tim's best friend Mike, who, as I played in the opening, was thrown out of the Territorial Army for stealing a tank and trying to invade Paris. That right there should tell you if this is the show for you or not. Stacey's friend is Twist, who played by Katie Carmichael, who ends up hanging out and, you know, is in fashion, quote unquote.
Right.
You have to see the show to understand that. Yeah. Living in the building also is Brian.
I don't think you can describe him.
My favorite character.
Brian Topp, the artist who lives in the building. And the landlady, the glorious landlady. Julia Deakin playing Marcia Klein.
I've known so many people like her. It's just creepy.
What's funny is you see her in that, and then you see her playing the bartender's wife in Hot Fuzz, and it's like so very different of characters. Those are the main players. Everyone else, you know, there's a few bit players who pop up here and there, like Tires, and I think that's really the only other one, isn't there? That's really the only bit character until you get to the end when he gets a girlfriend and stuff.
Yeah, oh yeah. I was going to say maybe the comic shop.
Yes, Bilbo. And the whole reason why Tim had to move out of his house was because his girlfriend got off with a guy named Dwayne, who you might know as the voice behind Darth Maul. Peter Serafinowicz. So you have no idea how many times I had to hear that name to be able to say that right.
Wait, Darth Maul is in like episode one?
Yeah, he did the voice of Darth Maul.
Ray Park did.
No. The guy who plays Dwayne in Spaced does the voice.
Oh, really?
Did he even have
any lines?
He had a few.
At last, we'll have our revenge. Yeah.
Little things like that. And they make references to that in Spaced, to his specific lines.
Oh.
And it also explains why there's the certain Star Wars footage that's in it at the beginning of series 2, because that was right after the movie came out. And this movie is for geeks. There is no question about it. It's kind of hard to really, we're just summing it up very quickly there. But Do you guys have a particular favorite homage they did? Because there are homages all over the place in this. In the first episode,
it's almost hard to pick up on what they're...
The Scooby-Doo one is so subtly pulled off that I absolutely adored it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
When they're moving in?
I'm trying to think of the ones that I like the most, because all the Star Wars ones are so clever.
Like I said, this wasn't really an homage, but when they went to the art show, his boyfriend, ex-boyfriend's art show or whatever... Freaking love that, because I had to go through that up at Boulder. So I was like, that's exactly what I had to watch every day in every class.
Oh, the performance art?
Yeah, the performance stuff. Oh, no, I just saw stuff. So I almost wasn't laughing at the beginning, because I was like, shit, am I supposed to take this seriously? But seriously, I swear to God, that's what it's the kind of stuff I had to watch.
The Rave.
That's my favorite episode.
Okay, I don't know if I can go with my favorite. Yes.
Yeah.
The Raver episode, that everyone ends up going to a rave, and there's a techno remix of the A-Team theme, which I've sent to Geek Radio Daily. They'll probably be playing it soon. We're going to play a spaced mix on the outro that it's on there, too, and that's just fun. I think my favorite is the John Woo homage.
Yeah.
But there's a psychic connection between all men, and it's essentially they do air guns for like 3 minutes, and it is just hilarious. You really can't do this thing justice. If you do a search on YouTube, you'll find it. It's good stuff.
I think you said it, Dave. Sorry to interrupt you.
No.
You so nailed it. It's about the characters and the story, which is so good, because the story really is involving. It's like, it's like The Office. Like you want them to hook up. You like them as people, but the fact that they're not, you're still watching. And they really play off that tension so well. The characters are so much fun. Even when the episodes, some of the plots of some of the episodes don't come to mind immediately.
Yeah.
But I remember individual moments because the cast, the ensemble.
Sex noises.
That was great, because the ensemble here is so good and the writing is so good. I mean, it really is one of those shows where it's almost like, I don't want to use this comparison because it's so easy and it's kind of crass, but Friends, where even when the episodes weren't about anything really all that great, they can coast on it because the characters were always so engaging.
And it also helps when you only have 7 episodes a season. It means that you can have a bit more time to really crack down and make the writing a bit tighter.
Yeah.
As opposed to like 24 episodes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. You know, the paintball episode is one of my favorites too. And, you know, how I don't know if you've watched the homage track, but when one of the characters, you know, dies, on there it says, for the homage, the source, every war movie ever.
Nice.
You know, they're very likable characters overall. All of them are. Even Marcia, the kind of creepy lady, is still very likable in her own special, disturbing kind of way. A big thing that a lot of...
She's always drinking wine.
Yes, she is. Always, you didn't always. See the episode where they explained it, did you?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
I don't think so.
They do explain it. Yeah, essentially she was actually training for the Olympics to be a track runner.
That's right.
And some guy hit her with a car and gave her a bottle of rum and was like, here, this will make the pain go away. And she's like, and he was not wrong. It's just never went anywhere from there. The characters are great. Part of the reason why I think that this show is going to make a good transition to the U.S. is because the humor is, it's not even American so much. It's not even British so much. It's geeky. There's so many, there are evil, subtle Evil Dead references all over the place in there.
Oh, he's got a freaking Evil Dead poster in
there. And did you see that when they got the dog, how he did the impersonation of the girl right behind him, and you know, they do join us. And it's just, we're not making any sense why the show's good. It's really hard to explain unless you've seen it, isn't it?
The tone of this is, because you described it to me before we watched it at your house, and the tone is so unique. It's
You can't say it's this meets this.
It's not. It doesn't have a mean bone in its body. Like in terms of satire, you know, you could say, well, it's kind of like live action Family Guy, but it's not mean spirited,
and it's not as dumb as Family Guy is.
You could almost say if you liked Shaun of the Dead, Shaun of the Dead fits in very well as an episode of Spaced, just in that sense of humor. You know, the episode where they got the inspiration for Shaun of the Dead, where they got the cheap speed,
and
you had Mike running around the tree like a motorcycle. I mean, yeah. If you like Shaun of the Dead, if you like Hot Fuzz, there is no question you need to own this show because it is just that good.
Yeah,
like you said, they are homages. They're not mocking a TV show or anything. Even when they deal with their dislike of Episode One, it's funny, but it's also very touching. You know, like the Return of the Jedi scene.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. You know, we talk about music clearance. I don't know how they got Lucas to okay that.
Well, you know, I always wondered how Lucas felt about Cock Knocker and Jane, Silent Bob Strike Back. So Apparently, Lucas is loosened up in his older years. So.
Well, yeah. Well, you've heard of what they have.
I think you have to.
You heard about the statue they have at Skywalker Ranch or something. Yeah. It's Jar Jar stuck in carbonite.
No, that's great.
That I'm okay with.
Why doesn't Mattel release that as a toy? That'd be great.
Yeah, that would be the best-selling toy of all time. Yeah. Buy three of them so you can melt one. Yeah. And, you know.
Now, I want to ask you this, Dave, because I was talking to Julie about it, and we couldn't remember, because I know you've told me this. What came first, your love for this or that amazing experience where you got to see Shaun of the Dead with the cast? What came first?
It was going to see Shaun of the Dead up in Denver. They had the Shaun Squad website. I think it was shaunsquad.com. And they put up, you know, hey, if you want to go to the screening in Denver, you know, okay, I signed up, what the heck. And like the day of, or no, I think it was the week before, I got a phone call and, hey, this is so-and-so with the Shaun Squad. I'm like, you're kidding me. So we went up and got our VIP seats, and it was cool. It's like you're sitting with the press people and stuff. And I'm like, I wonder if they're going to be here. And sure enough, Edgar Wright, Nick Frost, and Simon Pegg all showed up and did a little Q&A afterwards, and couldn't have been nicer guys to talk to. And when we were over at first showing at .NET and I did the interview with Edgar, with Alex, you know, brought it up and, you know, it shows what kind of people these are when Edgar's like, oh, I remember the Brown Palace. I miss going there. You know, remembering details like that, these guys are very down to earth. It's very clear that they know where they've come from and they really appreciate the audience reaction, especially, you know, I guess everywhere. But I think they're kind of caught off guard with how much it's picked up over here. Absolutely. So, yes, it started with Shaun of the Dead. I actually have a Shaun Squad poster, mini poster downstairs. Nice. It's a zombie hands pointing out that says "Join now," and it's signed by all three of them.
That's awesome.
Yes.
And you remember last summer when we saw Nick Frost at the Superbad screening?
Like,
talk about a guy who, you know, is not wearing his celebrity like on his sleeve. Like, look at me. I mean, he just unassumingly walks into this huge crowded screening. He's wearing these glasses, kind of like mine. He's sitting there eating popcorn, just like a regular Joe, just kind of chilling.
Well, is this funny because it was like the whole cast, like McLovin and all them, like sitting up, and then yeah. Nick Frost. It was like, oh.
Yeah, it was like two seats behind us. Like, oh my God, it's Nick Frost.
But that it's when you see people who have a true love of the genre, you can't fake the love that's in the show space.
Yeah, truly.
You know, the reverence for the source material that they're, you know, spoofing or whatever. And there's so, it's clear these guys grew up on Star Wars. There's so many Star Wars jokes, down to when they're trying to go on a mountain rescue mission and they all take code names based off of Star Wars. And the ending of the episode actually is a direct mimicking of the end of Empire Strikes Back. There's a scene where there's a cultural exchange, we'll say, between the artist and Tim. Tim says he'll go to an art, you know, showing if he comes over and watches the Star Wars trilogy. They couldn't get the rights for the last song, for the Ewok song in the original edition of Return of the Jedi, and one of them knew it by heart, so they all sang it and recorded it and played that over the end of it.
That's what because I was like, I don't know if that sounds right, but it sounds like it.
Yeah, the Tekken 2 gags, you know, and Tomb Raider and. Yeah. What are you doing? Well, it depends on what I'm doing. What do you feel like right now? I feel like drowning things. And he keeps drowning Lara Croft, and it's good stuff.
Yeah, for a geek, this show is heaven. For people who won't even get all, for the gags that go over their head, it's still the writing and the characters are there. And that's why it really was one of these shows. Like, I can't believe it only lasted for the short time that it did, because it really is a quality show. It's better than every sitcom on right now.
It's why every time for the next, you know, I'm sure up till now they still hear, when's Space Series 3 coming? You know, and people are still hopeful. And it sounds like they're not totally, everyone involved isn't totally against the idea either. Cool. So, yeah.
I still want Hot Fuzz, too. I want to see Angel and Butterman back.
Where would they go? Would you send them to L.A.?
Send them to America.
Would you send them to L.A.?
Fish out of water story. Why not? I could see them.
So Hot Fuzz meets Rush Hour? That could be freaking.
I want to see them be security for a movie studio, you know, and they're making like Point Break 2. I mean, seriously, wouldn't that be fun?
Wow.
I think there's opportunities there. I do. I want to see it.
What are they doing next? What's on there?
They haven't said officially. I know that Simon Pegg just, he just has Star Trek finished up. He's got How to Lose Friends.
He's in Star Trek?
Yeah, he plays Scotty.
Oh.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Wow.
I don't know. I think he can pull it off, but Steph brought up a very good point. I think I even mentioned it on the show once. She said, are you really excited about this because you think Simon Pegg, who's could pull off a great Scotty, or do you use it because you just like Simon Pegg a lot? And I'm like, between it, you know, I think he'll do fine, but it's because I like Simon Pegg a lot.
Yeah.
I think he can play. If anyone's going to play the light character, he's the man to do it.
I just think he'd be fun in that part because he played a sort of similar role in Mission Impossible 3. You know, the third wheel, like helping out the main guy in charge.
I've never been to prison before. Yeah.
He was in Mission Impossible 3?
Yeah, he was the tech guy.
Where was I?
Tom Cruise calls him up and he like helps him while Tom Cruise is like running with his cell phone.
It's in eager anticipation to watch Tom Cruise dodge that missile. That's why.
There you go. All right. So, you want to say anything else about it, or should we just wrap it up and move along?
I'm good. Just yeah.
Check it out. It is so worth it. Bare minimum Netflix.
Check it out.
It is such a good show. We may give away a copy of the Region 2 3-disc collector's edition. I'm debating it. We'll see how that goes. But okay. Well, let's talk about what is hitting theaters this week.
This week you've got Will Ferrell giving another shot after semi-pro. Joining him is his Talladega Nights co-star, great actor, doing some really silly movies, John C. Reilly. X-Files, I Want to Believe. I want this movie to kick so much
butt. I want to believe this movie is going to be good.
Likewise. I want this to be one of the best movies of the year, if not the summer. And in very limited release, although I've heard great things about it, American Teen.
Cool. I want to see that.
No X-Files love?
I just, you know, I remember watching the show when I was little. And not getting it. And then I remember seeing the movie when it came out, but it's been so long that I'd like...
You'd just, like the series. It's scary.
That's what... I remember liking it when I was little, but it's all like lost in my...
Were you a fan of the
X-Files? I was never a big fan of the show. I loved the movie. Okay. I love Fight the Future. I'm excited to see this one again, especially since it's not going to have Doggett in it or whatever. I mean, right, as much as
the cigarette-smoking man going
to
be in it?
Well, he's got to be.
He has to be. It's not X-Files. And we can only hope for the lone gunman to show up.
Yes.
Because, yeah... We found, yeah, Barry and I were at Best Buy this week and saw they had the entire series of The Lone Gunman for $12.99, and it came with a free ticket for X-Files. I'm like, that makes the box set like $5.
Oh. Yeah, I'm a big, big, big fan of that show. Man.
Yeah. And then, should we talk about DVDs hitting next week? Because next week is almost as good as this week.
It's pretty crazy.
Did we talk about this week's DVDs?
No. Yep. It's okay. It only take like a minute. 21 this week in DVD, 21 single and double disc special edition. We've already talked about Space. See it again. Robot Chicken Star Wars. Also a nice geeky choice. One of my favorite movies of 1985, Kiss of the Spider Woman, the single and two disc collector's edition. Great
which are Amazon exclusive somehow.
Not born yet.
Aw, how cute.
And now I feel old.
I feel very old right now. Comedy Central presents TV Funhouse. TV Funhouse, come back with my show. And Masters of Horror Season 2.
So one quick thing about Spaced. It's interesting. They got all kinds of famous people to do some commentaries.
Great.
I don't know if they're going to have the commentaries on the 3-disc set. That's going to kind of define whether I give a set away or not. Because, I have an extra. So you'll have to have a Region 2 player, but still.
Stay tuned.
Yes. And then let's hit this week's next week's DVDs.
Next week's DVDs, you've got Witchblade, the complete series. I guess that's like Charmed, except they've got guns. I don't know.
Don't ask. It's Battle Woman thing for geeks. All the geeks out there who know the show are going, yay!
So it's like a chick fight.
Kind of.
Why did I miss this? Shine a Light, Scorsese and the Rolling Stones in the concert movie that really didn't do that well. Hey, quick question. You guys know
if you want to see Moving
movie?
Leather? Go see Shine a Light.
Wait, what?
Do you know the concert movie that actually was the top grossing one of the spring?
No.
Hannah Montana.
You just wanted to make Josh die a little bit on the inside.
You know how much I die every time somebody says her name?
Really?
Swear to God, dude. I've.
So you don't mind Miley Cyrus? You just can't.
No, either. It just makes my skin crawl.
Well, you know, the Hannah Montana movie comes out next summer.
You're kidding.
It's the first. No. It's the May 1st movie.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway.
Somehow I don't think it's going to be in the same line as, you know, Freaky Friday or, you know, something, you know, good.
Hang on. I have to go release some things.
I think I'd watch the Lizzie McGuire movie again first.
Oh, me too.
Wow. Well,
I would rather sit through Rugrats meets Wild Thornberries than the Hannah Montana movie.
See, all I heard was on that one.
Oh, I said
we're
Rugrats.
Too old.
Oh,
that's
but
all.
I don't know what did better though, U2, 3D, or Shine a Light. But I know Shine a Light. Out of all those three, honestly, it got the worst reviews.
Yeah, I know everyone loved U2. So
U2 was awesome. Also, opening. Sorry to. Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay. Very available in R and unrated special edition. To be very delicate about this, it opens up with a character ejaculating on himself. How much more could possibly
See,
be?
I think I've said this before. I only like to go with the theatrical cuts on things because
it depends on the movie.
Because sometimes they screw it up.
The Abyss director's cut is such a superior
product. But there's a difference between a director's cut and
a marketing ploy.
Yeah,
you know, like date movie or.
What I
hate
is when they release the director's cut and they don't release the alternate original cut, and the only cut available is a crappy version. That's what happened to Soul Survivors. Remember that with Casey Affleck? I liked it. It was a horror movie. It was actually very well done.
Was it different from the other version on DVD?
Completely
oh,
different.
Maybe that's why I didn't like it.
Yeah, the director's cut on DVD was terrible. The version in theaters was not perfect, but it was so much better. So much better. You know, I've waited 20 years for a Lost Boys sequel. I don't think the Lost Boys, the tribe, is exactly what I had in mind. But Corey Feldman is back. He's one of the frogs.
And Corey Haim is in it, too.
Is he really?
Yeah. And have you seen the video that was online about, like, Corey Haim freaking out on the set? There's speculation as to whether that's staged or not. Oh, I don't know.
Surprise me, if it but stayed, I was but just it's like, pretty damn funny.
It was like dudes having a meltdown on the set. They're
I
like,
ruined my character.
I hope it's staged.
Gosh. Oh yeah, he's like, I don't like the direction you guys have gone with my character. Yeah, it's not your character. It belongs to Warner Brothers. If you don't get out here in the next 15 minutes, we've lost the entire day of shooting. I mean, it was very interesting. I need my prescription drug. Oh, it was.
Oh my gosh.
I'll see if I can find it, but yeah, it's out there. Yeah.
Corey Haim, Corey Feldman, all the Coreys have fallen.
Okay, let's get to the good stuff. Yeah.
Dark City director's cut. Alex Proyas's second film after The Crow.
So Barry and I liked the original, but
you're gonna call me out?
No, it's not calling out. It's not calling out. It's I'm very curious.
I'm gonna get geek bashed.
No. Just because it's my first DVD I ever bought. You know,
along
with Aliens.
I think I watched it like two or three years ago, and I just couldn't connect with it. I thought it was cheesy. I thought the twist in it was stupid. I just was like...
Did you find the music exciting? Because I think it's got one of the great, most exciting music scores I've ever heard.
I don't think I listened to it.
Jennifer Connelly? No?
It just didn't do anything for me. I was like, I've seen this, and because I was like, I've seen The Matrix, I've seen all these movies, and I know that came out before. So for me, it was like, I've seen all these movies before.
Like the strangers all floating around with their hats and their creepy bald heads, the little
Jennifer one. Connelly out on the pier just like Requiem for a Dream. Or
yeah.
No, it's okay. If the director's cut's really good, I might say you should check it out. But
I would give it another shot because I know it's like the whole, Holy Grail film.
No, it's not.
It's a big cult movie.
It is a big cult movie.
Just because it was such a flop in theaters. And other than Roger Ebert, nobody paid it any attention. It really is. I think it holds up well.
Okay.
Freakazoid, complete first season.
I've owned a bootleg of this for 4 years now?
Mm-hmm. Can't wait to buy it.
And I can't wait to toss it so I can get an official copy. Yes. This is one of those things, I'm the kind of person who, if it's something I've wanted for like 10 plus years, no one's put it out, I will download, buy a bootleg, whatever. But as soon as it comes out legitimately, you have my money, Warner Brothers. You will have my money with this.
Talk about another like just awesomely written show.
Yes. Oh yeah, the Candlejack episode. I mean, in the first season, the Candlejack episode and the Fanboy episode by themselves are worth the price of admission.
And Foamy the Freaky Dog. You can't forget about
Foamy. Oh, yeah, Foamy the Freaky Dog. And his deaf mute servant, Ingmar?
Ingmar. Where's Ingmar?
He's sign languaging to him and he's not looking.
Did you see the animated The Tick?
Yes, I did.
Would you say better or not as good? Or
different. Different sense of humor.
Okay.
I dug it. Yeah, different. Various people two people that have had on the show. Jack Valenti making fun of himself.
That's right.
Nothing gets better than that. That was
and
so
Ben
funny.
Stein's in it as well. And on the Fanboy episode, it actually does have Mark Hamill's voice as the object of Fanboy's affections at the end.
But Jack Valenti talking about the MPAA and like the rating system of stuff, so freaking awesome.
Oh, it is hilarious. Yeah, it's yes. Oh.
Equally awesome. From the same network, Tiny Toons Adventures Season 1, Volume 1.
And we need to say that's a 4-disc set, it looks like, on Amazon. Yes. So it may be one of those things where, quote-unquote, season one is an obscenely long run. So
I just remember watching that every day when I came home from school.
I remember Animaniacs premiered on one of those episodes, didn't it?
Oh, did they?
I believe they did. And where's my Animaniacs Volume 4?
I have my Animaniacs, and I've also got the Tiny Toons soundtrack, and they've got all those wacky songs that are so brilliant.
I may need to borrow
seriously.
From you.
Seriously, I'll lend it to you. They're good for like some like episode sound drops. They're so good.
Oh, yes. Tiny Toons is, I'm really looking forward to seeing that again, except for Elmira. That. Elmira got on my nerves to no end, but yeah.
Did you guys like Pinky and the Brain?
Yeah, I did.
Not as much.
Okay.
Yeah. I take them in small doses, like when it's a skit on Animaniacs, the full-blown episodes. I haven't bought any of the seasons yet.
It really was kind of like the same episode over and over again with little differences.
Yes.
I love Pinky in the Brain.
Nothing wrong there.
Great title. I'm not sure about the movie. Cocaine Cowboys 2. Hustling with the Godmother.
Grandmother.
I almost said grandmother. Sorry, Hustling with the Godmother. Can't even
remember. So what happens sometimes is Dave doesn't get the list of DVDs coming out in time. So he starts randomly reading off titles, and once in a while Barry will take hold of one. I'm like, what is the Cocaine Cowboys 2? Yeah, we're not talking about that. He's like, Cowboys 2? What was that? Hustling with what? I'm like, oh no.
What was Cocaine Cowboys 1?
If I remember correctly, it's a documentary about the 80s, how cocaine became like the big drug of choice and all the people who were dealers. This sounds like a really crass, straight-to-DVD remake, but the original was actually a pretty well-regarded documentary.
Huh.
Apparently very violent.
Okay, then. Have we got anything else, or is that...
Just two more.
Oh, yeah.
Never Back Down.
Never Surrender. Sorry. I'm never gonna give that movie a break.
Never gonna give you.
Oh, you just half Rickrolled the entire
almost
audience.
Rickrolled. Didn't quite do it. It's a pseudo Rickroll.
Wait, there's some girl in Never Back Down that I like. I can't think of
okay.
Her name. Anyway, I don't know why.
Is
I had
name actress or
no? I guess.
Okay,
go on.
Just some girl. And from the director of The Descent, Doomsday.
But I actually heard good things from my brother.
Really? I haven't heard any. I haven't heard anything about it.
Oh, really? He just said it was like uber violent. Mm. So I don't know.
Because it looked like Mad Max to me.
Yeah, dead.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, okay. If you'd like to shoot us an email, I don't have the voicemail with me, no, number with me this week. Sorry. If you want to shoot us an email, hit us over at podcast, Barry, Dave, Josh, Ethan, at screengeeks.com.
Send me email.
Yeah, you have to check your email there, buddy. You may have email.
I can't check it.
I need to forward it. I know. I'll get you taken care of. We'll hook it up after this show. But yeah, shoot us an email. Let us know if you end up watching Spaced, let us know what you think, because we love this discussion. We're actually working on getting forums up and running here soon. I promise we're getting there.
Did we get any letters this week?
We did not.
Okay, I got one.
Did you?
Oh, yeah, quick shout out. Quick shout out to Sean Williams. Thank you, Sean. It took me a while to get to your email, likewise. thank you so much. You called to my attention about WALL-E, about the use of live action of WALL-E and how one critic compared it to what Chaplin did in modern times. So thank you so much. That was a really good read. And it was really good just to have a different take on it. And you know, it makes me appreciate the movie even more. I still don't like the inclusion of live action in WALL-E, but still I think I understand better why it's there, and I still love the film.
I understand why it's there. I still don't like it either.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, we'll play a little bit of space music, and you'll hear that A-Team techno remix in a little bit here. But yeah, until then, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
And Josh.
Take it easy. Get your rave on.